during the primary process, of course, there was a lot of talk about the Bernie Sanders revolution. And when Senator Sanders didn't win the nomination, where do all those passionate first-time politically engaged voters go? Does Bernie Sanders hand it off to Elizabeth Warren? Where do they go? Do they go to the Green Party with Jill Stein? But conversely, Donald Trump has energized a voting base that we haven't seen in many, many years, in some cases ever. And win or lose, the question is, what happens to the voting bloc that Donald Trump has activated? It's an interesting piece in Politico, Why Trumpism Will Outlast Donald Trump. Joining us right now is the author of that piece, a professor of public policy at George Mason University, and the author of The New Minority. It's a pleasure to welcome to the show, Justin Guest. Justin, how are you?
Doing well, Doug. Thanks very much for having me.
I appreciate you coming on. This is kind of my take on it. It's not scholarship. It's purely anecdotal and observational from this perch. But I do believe that Donald Trump was right when he happened to be in the UK when the Brexit election went down. And he talked about the connection between the Brexit election and his own rise in the polls. And I think that I think that what the commonality is that there are millions and millions and millions of people who have been really devastated by globalization and by the massive change in the cultures of their communities because of the influx of immigrants who come from countries with very different social, political, religious backgrounds. And they were basically told by the elites to shut up. We know better. That your jobs don't matter. That you're a racist, a xenophobe, or a provincial for trying to cling to the past. And, you know, when people have their concerns ignored for decades, they find an outlet. And in England, it was the Brexit election. In the United States, it has been Donald Trump.
I think that's an excellent parallel, and it's actually precisely that parallel that motivated the book I just authored, The New Minority, that you very kindly mentioned. Yeah, that's exactly right. There is a transatlantic political phenomenon of white working class people in post-industrial societies who have largely been left behind economically over the last 40 years, but who have also been left behind, consequently, politically. So not only do they not matter as much economically as they once did when they were the backbone of industrialized, manufacturing-based economies, they also have less political power and clout. Political parties don't cater to them any longer. And so there is this mass of people who don't feel like they have had a representative, someone who speaks what they think. And Donald Trump has seized that mantle, intentionally or not. And in the United Kingdom, it's been UKIP, the United Kingdom Independence Party, which has led the Brexit campaign and had a predecessor in the British National Party that has tried to seize this this opportunity in a political vacuum.
And it doesn't surprise me, again, looking to the Brexit election, it doesn't surprise me that demographically younger voters supported staying in the European Union and older voters didn't. Because we've essentially had decades of, if you will, proselytizing for essentially a borderless world. It's almost as if John Lennon's Imagine has become public policy. And whereas older people have more of a connection to their national identity, younger people see themselves and organize their lives on social media platforms across international borders, across time zones, across cultures. Older people are more connected to their Britishness, or if you will, their American. I admit I'm a nationalist. I like being an American. I like the fact that my passport says the United States of America. I don't want to give up my Americanness. But a lot of people, and certainly the globalists, look at international borders as, you know, vestigial holdovers of a bygone era.
You know, the difference between the ideas that you were just, you know, talking about your own there and those of young people is that they don't necessarily see it as mutually exclusive. They don't see a loss of their American identity or their British identity from becoming more global in nature. they think they can have it both ways. And for many young people, that's precisely what they do. They're American when they want to be American, and they get to, you know, eat Korean food and listen to Latino music anytime they want to, and they can still claim to be American at any moment. And so it's a very postmodern kind of identity that we are experiencing right now, and that is definitely a generational divide.
We're talking with Justin Guest, who authored the book The New Minority, and the website for that is thenewminority.net, thenewminority.net. Justin, there was a precursor election to me that parallels this, and that was the Edward Edwards, David Duke governor's race in Louisiana about 20 years ago. When there was a massive turnout, like something like 80+% of the voters of Louisiana showed up and voted in that election. And part of it was they recognized, a lot of people recognized, well, we don't want to have the Klansman as the governor of the state. It would be embarrassing. But when you looked at David Duke's voter, the final results, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he got a significant number of votes. And you look at that and go, well, what does that say? Does that say that there are that many people in the state of Louisiana who are racist, who wanted a Klansman to be governor of their state? Possibly. But another way of looking at it is that this rural white poverty, these lost white lives, if you will, who have become relegated to the dustbin, the ash heap of history politically, felt like, well, whatever his flaws, at least he speaks to my issue, and nobody else is.
That's exactly right, and that's and just paralleling as you're clearly doing with Donald Trump. That's what's happening here. People vote for Donald Trump as they do for any political candidate for multiple reasons, and you know sometimes it's just that they just gain whoever the opponent is. They only have two choices, really. Other times it's because they really do agree and believe what they say. But for another class of voters, and many of them are the white working class, especially, I think, in the Rust Belt of the United States right now, Donald Trump is an alternative. He is anti-establishment, and by voting for him, you're sending a message to American political parties and elites that your vote still matters, and you can't be taken for granted. You know, his voter base is a lot of people who have voted Democrat before, Republican before, and seen their lives change very little. And so at this point, they will try just about anything. And even though they agree with a lot of characterizations of him as false bravado and arrogance and, a loose cannon, as Hillary Clinton accuses him of being, they don't mind because they know that going with a conventional establishment candidate like Hillary Clinton is unlikely to yield any real results for them in the future, because it hasn't in the last 40 years.
No, I agree. I think that in an election cycle where change is the operative word, Hillary Clinton is the establishment. She is the system. A vote for Hillary is a vote for more of what we've got. Whereas a lot of folks that we've talked to say they don't care, burn it down. They're willing to roll the bones that something better will result. Now, of course, the codicil to that is it can get worse. You know, people say it can't get worse. Oh, yes, it can. It can definitely get worse. We're talking with Justin Guest, who's a professor of public policy at George Mason University. Let me ask you this, because the piece, of course, is about Trumpism outlasting Donald Trump. Should Donald Trump lose the election in November, where does this voting bloc go? Where does it go from here?
A lot of that question depends on what the Republican Party does. So they will go according to where the Republican Party goes. The Republican Party faces a really, really terrible choice right now. Either, an acknowledgement of Donald Trump's success here and the fact that there will be a yearning for more of that message in the future, they capitulate and they say, okay, we're going to adopt these views and we integrate them into our big tent. They're going to alienate a lot of their moderates who will flock to the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party will expand to the center and expand their tent. On the other hand, the Republican Party can say, that's not us. We're not Donald Trump. It didn't work this election. It's not going to work in the future. And it's just too small of a base for us to pander to. So we're just going to ignore that group of people. Well, by doing that, they are opening themselves up for either third party or another insurrection inside their party for the years to come on their far right flank. So really, if you are a Trumpist, if you will, if you like Donald Trump and you believe in his message and hope that candidates will espouse it in the future, then you're waiting to see whether the Republican Party is going to recognize that or ignore it again.
Well, that is the problem, and this has been my concern from the day that he announced he was running, that the issues that he's raising, I give him a lot of credit for raising the issue of immigration, raising the discussion on globalization. These are conversations that we should be having, and it should be on the front burner. We're here in Southern California. The immigration issue has been an issue for 40 years, but it's been largely spiked. And anybody who raises it, like I said, is a racist, a xenophobe, or a provincial. And he's forced people to have this conversation. Unfortunately, he's now the face of it. And my fear is that if his campaign goes up in flames, goes down in flames, that they'll blame the issue rather than the messenger. They'll shoot the message.
You know, I don't think that's going to happen, only because politics is a business like any other. And just like, you know, when Pinkberry started serving tart frozen yogurt, everyone else started serving tart frozen yogurt. And when Apple made a smartphone, Samsung did too. Like that, in politics, people see that what Donald Trump is doing is working. And so they're, you know, opportunistic politicians will seize on the opportunity and the vacuum that he will leave if and when he loses in 2 months, to actually say, well, I'm going to be carrying that banner forward in the future, because clearly this is enough to motivate and win elections in a lot of states, in a lot of counties, in a lot of districts.
Well, that's true. And that, of course, is the concern that the Republican establishment, to the extent that there is such a thing left, has, is that Trump runs the risk of turning the party into a regional party rather than a national party. And the Republicans have been headed that way for a while, by the way. The Electoral College map does not favor them for winning the presidency, period. And as a result, you can end up winning Senate seats, you can end up winning governor's mansions, and you can win a lot of congressional districts, but you can't stitch together the magic 270 to pull off the presidency.
No, that's exactly right. And the question is how much longer even we can say that it will last in governor elections and also House elections. Because with demographic change in the United States, will come new districts that are, you know, that the Republicans have sort of survived largely by owning state houses and redistricting through gerrymandering to their advantage. That's only going to last so long as demographic change takes place. And the Republicans have to ask themselves, you know, are we just going to jettison the idea of actually winning the White House again, or are we going to, you know, try to compete as a center-right party that can actually build a national coalition?
Well, it's going to be fascinating to see how this plays out. Of course, all of this changes if Trump wins in November, and that could happen. We just don't know. There's so much campaign left to play out, and the world is so volatile right now that I largely suspect that the incident that ultimately turns this election hasn't even happened yet. Certainly back in 2008, that was the case. In September of 2008, nobody was talking about the economy as a principal issue. And then the market crashed in October. Completely changed everything.
The unknown unknowns.
Yep. Hey, listen, Justin, thank you so much for coming on. Let's appreciate it. The book is called The New Minority. TheNewMinority.net is the website. We appreciate your being with us.
My pleasure. Anytime. Hello, Los Angeles.
Okay.